The following announcement has been paid for by Perched on the Top Rope.
Hey everybody, this is Badass Billy Gunn, and you're listening to Perch on the Top Rope. And if you're not down with that, got two words for you. Suck it.
Welcome everyone to Perched on the Top Rope. I am your host, former Dirt Sheet writer from Daily DDT, Ringside News, Sports Kita, and more. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Lee Walker, and we have quite the exciting weekend of sports entertainment. Or professional wrestling, how I would prefer it to be, with AEW and WWE. Now, on Saturday, we have AEW's All In, and we have WWE Saturday Night Main Event. And on Sunday, we have WWE Evolution 2. But this episode, fans, we are going to talk about AEW All in Texas this Saturday, and it has an interesting start time of 2 p.m. Central Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. It's preceded by 0 hour pre-show at noon Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And this is all done, folks, because WWE has their Saturday Night Main Event. Quite frankly, I'd not have my show on at the same time too. Can't blame them there. Let's also not take away anything from AEW here, because AEW All In Texas is doing a lot of cool things. For example, on Saturday the 12th, it's taking place at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. It marks the first AEW pay-per-view in Texas. It's also the first AEW pay-per-view at a Major League Baseball stadium. And this will be the first all-in to be live-streamed on Amazon Prime Video. Now, this will also be the first professional wrestling event to be held at Globe Life Field. So, special start time. There you go. I want to break down the card and talk about that. There are 8 matches currently scheduled for AEW All In, and I'm going to talk about the first match, which is a 3-way tag team match for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. Now, it'll be the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, who are the champions, as they take on Jet Speed, Kevin Knight, and Speedball Mike Bailey, and the Patriarchy of Christian Cage and Nick Wayne. We have seen all these teams going back and forth for quite some time now, leading us here to this match. My honest opinion, neither one of those teams are the team to defeat the Hurt Syndicate. The Hurt Syndicate still pretty fresh in AEW, so I don't see them losing anytime soon. Now, our next match, folks, is for the AEW TNT Championship, as Adam Cole takes on Kyle Fletcher. Now, at AEW Dynasty in April, Adam Cole defeated Daniel Garcia to win that AEW TNT Championship. And after Double or Nothing in May, Cole began to feud with Kyle Fletcher over the championship. Now, Cole had defeated Fletcher via disqualification on May 28th's episode of Dynamite. And on July 5th at AEW Collision 100, the 100th episode of Collision, Fletcher defeated Garcia to become the number one contender for that AEW TNT Championship at All In. Kyle Fletcher's been quite impressive. Quite impressive. Is Adam Cole's reign done? Is it over? Could Kyle Fletcher defeat Adam Cole? I think this would be a step in the right direction towards building those new stars, where Adam Cole has been established anywhere and everywhere he's gone. He doesn't necessarily need the championship, but in a company like AEW, you kind of do. I want to say Kyle Fletcher wins this match and becomes the hashtag and new AEW TNT champion. Whether or not that happens is, hey, we're going to find out Saturday. Now, the next match is unique because it has unique rules. We are going to see Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay take on the Young Bucks, Matthew Jackson and Nicholas Jackson. This is a tag team match, and like I said, the rules are a little different here. So if Ospreay and Strickland lose, they cannot challenge for the AEW World Championship for 1 year. If the Young Bucks lose, they will be stripped of their executive vice president titles. See, I say this one's unique because what have they done? I mean, they don't really run with it on screen like I thought they would. They don't exactly like go out there and just make matches or force themselves to have championships or anything like that. Based off stipulation alone, I'm saying Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay win. Simply just based off the rules. Because the executive vice president, like I said, those titles, like, it hasn't really meant anything. But let's break down how we got here. And it all started at Dynasty on April 6th when the Young Bucks returned after a hiatus back in October when they left. They would interfere in the main event, assisting Jon Moxley in defeating Swerve Strickland. This allowed Moxley to retain the AEW championship. Strickland would feud with both Moxley and his Death Riders stable and the Young Bucks, which accumulated in an Anarchy in the Arena match at Double or Nothing on May 25th. Swerve's team won, if you remember. So at AEW Dynamite Summer Blockbuster on June 11th, the Young Bucks renewed their rivalry with Strickland and attempted to superkick him with shoes that had thumbtacks encrusted into the soles of the shoes, which following Strickland's match with Will Ospreay, but Ospreay purposely moved in front of Strickland and took the superkick instead. So, on June 25th, on AEW Dynamite, Ospreay and Strickland challenged the Bucks to a tag team match at All In. And at first, the Bucks refused. So at Dynamite 300, the 300th episode of AEW Dynamite on July 2nd, Ospreay and Strickland again challenged the Young Bucks to the match, but this time added the stipulation that if the Bucks lost, they would be stripped of their executive vice president titles. But if Strickland and Ospreay lost, neither of them would be able to challenge for the AEW championship for a year, to which the Young Bucks then accepted. Fans, I'm sorry, but to me it feels like the rules kind of give this match a dead set giveaway. Like, I'm not really sure how else to explain this other than, I don't know. That's just the way I see it. I don't think that executive vice president title means jack squat. I think Ospreay and Strickland not being able to challenge for the world championship in a year is way more important than for the Young Bucks. So my money is going on Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay winning this match. So for these next two matches, folks, it's going to be a little hard for me to determine winners or any of the sort, as we have the women's and the men's casino gauntlet match for a future AEW Women's World Championship match. And when it comes to the women, I believe the only two known participants right now are Chris Statlander and Megan Bain. And when it comes to the men's, I believe we know that MJF and Briscoe are going to be starting us off. But we also know that Bandido, Brody King, Mystico, and Ricochet are also in that match. Now, if you don't know the rules to the Gauntlet match, it's basically a Royal Rumble. Two start, one comes out during each interval. Last one in the ring wins, and the last one in the ring is getting an AEW championship match in the future. So, I can't predict who's going to be in it. I don't know. I'm sure we're going to get some returns and some surprises and who knows what else. I'm still waiting to find out why AEW never used Ultimo Dragon when they were going to have him in a match and never did. Nearly 5 years later. But I digress. And our next match, folks, is a winner's takes all match to unify the AEW Continental Championship, which is held by Okada, and the AEW International Championship, held by Kenny Omega, into the inaugural AEW Unified Championship. And yes, it's as stupid as it sounds. I'm sorry. Unified Championship. I mean, I can get why they can't call it the Intercontinental Championship, mixing international and continental, because WWE already has that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what these guys are wrestling for a unified championship. So I'm sure you're wondering, fans, how did we get here? And that is real simple, because upon winning the 2024 Continental Classic at World's End on December 28th, the newly crowned AEW Continental Champion, Okada, was confronted by his returning longtime rival, Kenny Omega, who had been out of action for a year due to, you know, legitimately being diagnosed with diverticulitis, which, you know, was true. That he, anyway, he'd begun to attack the Elite, Omega's former stable, whom Okada had joined by that time. So Omega would go on to win the AEW International Championship at Revolution in March of 2025 this year. Following a successful title defense on AEW Dynamite on June 4th, Omega was confronted by Okada. What was proposed? A winners-takes-all match for both the International Championship and the Continental Championship, scheduled for All In. Now, the contract signing was the following week at AEW Dynamite's Summer Blockbuster. Tony Schiavone had confirmed that the bout would be a championship unification match, which would unify both titles as the AEW Unified Championship. I'm sorry, it just sounds foolish. And I get having so many champions, you know, there's so many championships for the men's and the women's, and they're needed, though. WWE has a bunch of titles. They're needed. You can't have everyone wanting to, you know, go for your world championship. You got to have some secondaries and some thirds and even some fourths. You got to make these people feel important. You got to make them want to work for your company. So higher wages and championships it is. I'm going to refer to this as a double main event, because for both the men's championship and the women's championship, it involves the winners of the Owen Hart Cup from this year, which is Mercedes Moné and Hangman Adam Page. And Hangman Adam Page is facing John Moxley in a Texas death match, while Mercedes Moné will challenge Timeless Toni Storm. So, Hangman Adam Page and Mercedes Moné win the Owen Hart Cup Challenge, which the finals took place at Double or Nothing May 25th of this year. The women's tournament, as I just said, was won by Mercedes Moné, who defeated Jamie Hayter to earn a championship match against Timeless Toni Storm, while the men's tournament, won by Hangman Adam Page, defeated Will Ospreay to win a world championship match against the reigning champion, John Moxley. Now, on July 2nd, on AEW's Dynamite 300, it was confirmed that the bout between Moxley and Hangman would be contested as a Texas death match. And boy, oh boy, are we gonna see Moxley bleed or what? The real question is how long will it take? I give it about 10 minutes. And that is being very generous. Very, very generous. Now, on the media call with Tony Khan, he claims that he has the final say in that Mercedes Moné does not have creative control. However, we have heard Mercedes Moné openly say that she has creative control and works with Tony Khan very closely on what they're doing. So, I guess you're going to have to listen to Tony Khan's words about all of that, because if you have made it far this long, then at the end we will have the AEW all-in media call with Tony Khan playing after our predictions. So, I can tell you that I personally do not want to see Mercedes Moné win. However, I don't think Mercedes is going to lose until she finds the right person to lose against. And for that, I think Mercedes Moné is a hashtag and new AEW Women's World Champion. But I also think we're going to get the same thing with Hangman Adam Page versus Jon Moxley. I think we're looking at a double world title change here, folks. And if I'm right, I'm for it. But fans, it's time to get to that AEW media call for All In with Tony Khan. So, remember, spoiler-free is the way to be. But also, with this being Thursday's episode, Friday we will have the predictions for WWE Saturday Night Main Event. And on Saturday, we will have the predictions for WWE Evolution 2. Have a good night, fans, and enjoy the media call for AEW All In with Tony Khan.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us today for this media call with Tony Khan to discuss the upcoming AEW All In Texas pay-per-view at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. A few quick housekeeping items in the interest of time and giving opportunities to as many people as possible. We ask that you kindly refrain from asking two-parted questions and please try to keep your questions focused on AEW All In Texas. I'll turn it over to Tony for some opening thoughts and then we'll open the lines for questions. Tony?
Thank you very much, Dan. Hey, everybody. I'm really excited about this. Thank you for joining us for the AEW All In media call. It's going to be a big, big week of events. Of course, we have Wednesday Night Dynamite tomorrow, Collision on a special Thursday, ROH Supercard of Honor, which I'm excited to talk a little bit about here, and also very, very, very excited for Saturday afternoon, AEW All In Texas. It's going to be a great, great event, and we're going to have a great call today. I'm going to try to answer as many of your questions as possible, and hopefully I'll see a lot of you this weekend at the event, and I'll try to answer as many questions as I can there, too. It's a really exciting time for AEW, and I really appreciate you all joining us for the call. And with that, Danny, let's take it away, man.
Sounds great, Tony. First up, we're going to have Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful. and he'll be followed by John Alba with the takedown on SI. Sean? We had Sean, but it looks like his audio may be working on it. Why don't we try John Alba at the takedown on SI, and we'll go back to Sean. John?
Great.
John?
Oh.
Hey, John, we can hear you.
Okay, good. Sorry, the thing really gives a hard time unmuting. I really appreciate the time, as always, Tony and everyone. Looking forward to being in Dallas for the show this weekend. Regarding someone in the main event, John Moxley, we did find out that he and the company are involved in ongoing litigation right now regarding a lawsuit filed from a production member, Chris Dispenza. I understand the company's not going to comment on any pending litigation, but you've always been pretty transparent, Tony, in the past about protocols that the company has in certain situations, just like in COVID. What kind of insight can you provide on any protocols the company has regarding talent interactions with production crew during events?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, John. It's not the way I wanted to start the call, but I definitely can't comment on pending litigation. In this case, I think we really do care about the safety of everybody here. We always have, whether it's the talent, the fans, or the people working backstage in the truck, around the ring, the production team, and we all work together. And that is first and foremost, that this is a family of the wrestlers, the staff, and fans all working together to make these shows great 52 weeks a year, and we all need each other. Beyond that, yeah, I can't comment much on pending litigation, if that makes sense.
Thank you, Tony. Let's try Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful one more time, and he will be followed by Jason Powell with ProWrestling.net. Sean?
Hey, Sean. Guys. Hopefully you can hear me now.
I hear you now.
Okay. Sorry about that. There's been a lot of speculation online regarding the ascent of Mercedes Moné to this all-in spot and accumulating championships, with a lot of people speculating that she has creative control. And even though I don't think a lot of people understand maybe the difference between input and control, can you speak to that, confirm, deny it, or even the rumors that she dictates her own creative and the direction of her programs?
Yeah, that's definitely not true at all. So I would love to talk about that. First of all, the person you're talking about, Mercedes Moné, is an incredible, incredible talent. I have wanted Mercedes Moné in AEW. I want Mercedes Moné as a big star on the show and really enjoy working with her backstage and as a great talent. And she's done great things for the company doing media and is just a great person. I think Mercedes is a great addition to AEW. I also think that is ridiculous, the idea that people would think that because she's a strong wrestler on the show that she must be the one dictating that. That is the complete opposite of what happens here. And I think we've done a really great job this year in particular with a really focused build. And I think the best run of television we've ever had through the past 6 months in 2025. I just think it's been a great year for the company. And I am the only person with creative control over the show. At the end of the day, I'm responsible for what you see. And I'm really proud this year because I think this has been one of the best years, 6 months into the year so far, we've ever done of television. And philosophically, really, since the start of the year, in particular this year, I've had the final say since day one of AEW. And Sean, are you muted? Are you still there? Yeah, bring him back. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, I'm back.
So, hey. So I rarely do this, but since it's such an insightful question. So, I think you've been covering AEW basically since day one, right?
Correct.
Okay. So it's an insightful question you asked. So I'll try to make this like an interactive, like we would do if you were at the scrum.
Sure.
I think that's a good question. I've had the final creative control since the beginning of the company, and I really think we launched very successfully. When we started doing Dynamite the first few months, I was pretty open, I think, that around the holidays, I said I planned to come back with tighter focus in 2020, and that I really...
You said it was a New Year's resolution.
Yes, it was a New Year's resolution, and then in January, it's like a lot of New Year's resolutions that people make. It sometimes takes time to make a good transition into something you want to do. In that case, for me, it was going into 2020. I had said, I really am going to only do things I believe in, and I'm not going to be talked into something I don't believe in. It's possible I'm either going to, well, let me rephrase that. I'm either going to try to focus on AEW doing things that I come in and bring to the table and say, this is really what I want to do. Or if somebody has an idea and then I hear it and I say, okay, I really strongly believe in that, that is the way to go, you're right. But if I don't believe in it, I'm being talked into it, I'm dragged across the finish line, I just have found that those things are usually the things that don't work. And what's even worse is then when they don't work, there's nobody to blame but yourself. So, in 2020, 5 years ago, I had said, that's what I'm going to try to do. And I really felt like the shows in early 2020 were at that point, the best we had done. And the build to the original Revolution in 2020, was some of our best work. And I thought that mindset really served us well then going into the pandemic in 2020, and fast forward several years later, we've done a lot of great work. We've built the company and secured the media rights deal that was really important for our future. And again, in 2024, 5 years later, we're having so much success, yet I am finding at times I'm having so many great people with their ideas, and I'm listening to so many ideas, and I found there was a lot of input that I would take from people, and I would listen to a lot of suggestions and ideas. And I made a resolution again, 5 years later, the same resolution that I had made around the holidays in 2024 that I had made in 2019, which it was, that AEW is going to have a great year. And that I believe that 2025 was going to be that great year, and that I wanted to take a similar mindset and similar approach. And so this year, I think you're seeing the most focused AEW in many, many years, and the best AEW in many, many years, in part because there's less voices. I'm taking less input. I'm still listening to ideas, but if I don't feel 100% about it, I'm not going to do it. And that's been, I think, a really positive change for the company. And I think that the shows in the 2025, the way things have come together reflects that positively. Now, I have such a high opinion of Mercedes in particular. I also have a very high opinion of her opponent, Timeless Toni Storm. I think they're two of the best wrestlers on the planet. They're two people I meet with every single week, at least once a week, but usually multiple times a week, and hear out ideas they might have, and they hear out ideas I have. But for both of them, I'm very involved in the direction of their character personally. They have people that they'll work with in Mercedes' case, somebody she'd worked with for a long time, which is Jen. And I work really well with Jen and Mercedes. And in Tony's case, I found somebody to help me work on it, which is RJ, who is my assistant there. But in the case of Tony or Mercedes or so many of the other great talents that I'll work with closely, I have the final say on what they do. And in the case of this match, it's something that I really wanted to have in AEW for a very long time. But I also think that it's something the fans have wanted to see in AEW for a long time. And we've done a great job, in my opinion, building to this for over a year as a match that the fans absolutely are going to want to see. But the idea that anybody in AEW has a creative control card or that's why anybody would get a push here is because they dictate it, that's not how it works. And I think we have a great, great company, and we're having a great, great year. And it's because of, first and foremost, the people I mentioned earlier, the groups of people that all work together here to make this happen, which is a team effort between the wrestlers, the staff, and the fans all working together 52 weeks a year. And none of us can exist without the others. The person you asked about, Mercedes, that's a great example. She's a great, great wrestler. She's a focus of the show. She's the TBS champion because she's hugely followed and hugely talented star who brings so much to the table. I'm glad you asked about that because I've seen people infer that she must have, you know, some kind of a creative card because she's such a feature on the show. But that's ridiculous to me because when you have somebody of that stature, you'd want to feature them. You'd want to push them strongly. And I think that's why, in the case of Mercedes Moné, she is not only one of the biggest stars in AEW, but backstage, she's a great person to work with. I found her to be very, very receptive. And even if she comes in with an idea that points in one direction, I might have an idea that faces 180 degrees in the total opposite direction. But if I really feel strongly about it, I've found that she's somebody that is going to do what I believe and is very trusting of AEW, somebody that really likes working in AEW and likes being here. And I think one of the great things we've done in 2025 is try to focus AEW this entire year around the people that want to be here, the people that care about AEW, and the people that work really hard for us every week. I think Mercedes is a great example of that. Somebody is a really hardworking, very talented pro wrestler. Did that make sense, Sean, for what you were looking for?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense.
Great. Thank you very much. It was great, great answering that for you. And
thank you.
Maybe see you at the Scrum. Thanks, Sean.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean. And thanks, Tony, for that. Jason Powell with ProWrestling.net is up next, followed by Andrew Bedalla with Final Bell Media. Jason? Looks like we may have lost Jason.
We started the pay-per-view week early with the guys fighting with the audio button here.
Well, let's go to Andrew Bedalla with Final Bell Media, and then we'll go back to Jason.
Drew versus audio. Who's going to win?
I think I'm here. Tony, can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Drew, you have beat the mute button. It's good to hear from you, sir.
Whatever I win, I'll take it. Congratulations, Tony, on the success of AEW All In Texas at Globe Life Field in Arlington. With the success, do you think we could see a yearly AEW event held in a major baseball park across North America, considering your strong relationships with various MLB teams through True Media? It seems like a great opportunity to expand AEW's presence.
What a great question. Thank you, Drew. That's a great point. For those who don't know, I'm the chairman of True Media Networks. I'm fortunate to work with a great CEO and co-founder, Rafe Anderson, and a great president, co-founder, Jeff Stern. Together, the three of us and a great team of engineers and staff have built True Media up from when it was just the two of those guys who founded the company. And then the three of us have over the past decade built it up now with 27 out of the 30 major league baseball clubs working with True Media for analytics, engineering, and data tools, which is a huge part of Major League Baseball, as Drew was talking about. And I think it's a great point. It's been great working with the Texas Rangers. They've been a great client for True Media, and they're a great partner for AEW. Globe Life Field is a great site for the event, and AEW is having a lot of great momentum in 2025. If we can continue doing the things we're doing and expanding and having this kind of success, I absolutely believe there's the momentum there to continue having events in these kinds of great venues, whether it's Globe Life Field, which has been just a great partner and I think could be in the future again, potentially. And there are other great Major League Baseball opportunities. I have had a couple of discussions at times with some of our clients in Major League Baseball about that. And I think this has been a great opportunity for AEW. And in the future, I believe there are other great opportunities. I've been very open that I love being at Globe Life Field. And I'm also looking forward to AEW returning to Wembley Stadium in the future in London. But to your point, Drew, I absolutely think there's a market for AEW major events in these great Major League Baseball stadiums. And I'm really excited about this Saturday afternoon. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Andrew. And thank you, Tony. Going to try Jason Powell with ProWrestling.net one more time. And if not, we're going to follow up with a write-in from Ella J with a wrestling gal. Jason?
Can you hear me this time, guys?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, Tony, forgive me if I miss you addressing this somewhere. Can you explain how the unification of the Continental and International Championships is going to work? And if those titles are being retired, how does that impact the Continental Classic going forward?
It's a great question. I have never said I'm retiring the championships. This is the first time. Thank you for asking. I'm really very appreciative of a great question about this. I've never said that. So thanks for giving me the opportunity, Jason, to talk about this. I really appreciate it, man. The unified AEW championship is something that is new to us. Never before have two AEW singles championships been held by the same wrestler at the same time. It's something very new. We're very proud of what we built with the International Championship. We're very proud of what we built with the Continental Championship, which is most closely identified with the incredible Continental Classic Tournament, which has been one of the real strong points of AEW in the past few years. And now with AEW having such an awesome 2025, I feel so great about what we've done through the first 6 months of this year. And the Continental Classic is always something our fans now have looked forward to. So to think that we're having such a great start to the year, we're going to have a great all-in this weekend, and then we'll have an awesome Continental Classic to look forward to later in the year. There's a lot of excitement around this year. And the Continental Classic will absolutely be back. And I am going to talk more about that as we get later into the year and what it's going to entail this year. But there will be a Continental Classic. And I think the lineage of this unified championship would be intact with the International Championship and the Continental Championship. I created one unified championship belt to represent not only the significance of this match, the winner-take-all nature, that there will be somebody who's going to hold the international title and the continental title, that there would be one person carrying that lineage of these two championships after this match. And the belt itself represents the two champions that have gotten us to this point. Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada both have been fantastic. So representing with Kenny Omega the international title, Kazuchika Okada with the continental title, and the history that both men have with each other as well, seeing the one-wing angel and the rainmaker on the side plates of this championship belt that represents the unification of the international title and the continental title in this winner-take-all match. Absolutely, those two championships, they remain, their lineages remain, and the champion may even choose to carry all three championship belts. And I wanted to create something special around this match and something special around this event and the prestige of a match to unify two championships. And we've been here in AEW for 6 years. We've had multiple championships in men's and women's for many years. We've had multiple men's championships dating back for over 5 years now, and nobody has ever unified two singles championships in AEW before. So it's a very different situation. It's a winner take all match. So we've never had that before. And in this case, who knows if we'll see it again, but it's a very exciting thing. And I'm really looking forward to it for many reasons. The unification of the championship is a very, very exciting aspect of this match, but certainly the rivalry between Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega is something that predates AEW. It's something that, in my opinion, represents one of the best one-on-one rivalries ever in wrestling. I think it's one of the best one-on-one rivalries in all of sports. And there are so many reasons to be excited about the Continental Champion Kazuchika Okada versus the International Champion Kenny Omega and the unification of their belts. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Thanks, Jason, and thank you, Tony. I have a writing question from Ella J with A Wrestling Gal, and Ella's question will be followed by Dominic D'Angelo with Brass Ring Media. Tony, Ella writes, last year during the Casino Gauntlet match, we saw surprises, including Zack Sabre Jr. and Nigel McGuinness. Can we expect surprises for both of the Casino Gauntlet matches this year as well?
Well, it's a great question. I'm very excited for two Casino Gauntlet matches on AEW All In. I think it's possible. Anything could happen in these Casino Gauntlet matches. We've got a great roster of wrestlers in AEW right now also. And I think one of the great things about AEW in 2025 is how focused and well-organized the shows have been, and also how consistently great the effort from our awesome wrestlers has been. And the support from our fans has been really strong this year too. So it's been a really great effort all around from the team coming together. And in this case, I think it's possible with two Casino Gauntlet matches, you could see that. But I also think that we've done a great job focusing around the people that have been here. So I would expect to see a lot of focus through the Casino Gauntlet matches on the people that you've been seeing across Collision and Dynamite each week, and for that to continue in the Casino Gauntlet matches and throughout the year. I think the TV shows have been on our best run. We've had a great run of pay-per-view. I think we had a great run on pay-per-view last year too, and some great TV, but this has been the most consistently strong that all the shows have been, I think, possibly ever. And I want to continue that, and all of the pay-per-views and all of the work product right now should represent that mentality. So it is possible you would see some of that, but I also think there's going to be a lot of focus on the people that have been built towards and built around on the TV shows. Thanks for asking. And I am really excited about the first ever event with two Casino Gauntlet matches, with both a men's and a women's Casino Gauntlet match. It's a really, really fun concept. And I think to have two Casino Gauntlet matches, to have a men's Casino Gauntlet match and a women's Casino Gauntlet match for the first time ever, both on the same pay-per-view, that's going to be really, really great. And that's one of the very exciting features of AEW All In Texas this Saturday afternoon. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony. Dominic D'Angelo with Brass Ring Media is up next, and he'll be followed by Jim Varsalone with the Miami Herald. Dominic?
Hey, Tony, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Hey, all right, I made it. So I can't make it to All In Texas this weekend, but really excited for the event and the StarCast surrounding it and everything. It really brings back the old days of AEW and that kind of allure and everything. But did want to ask about somebody that brings a lot of allure to AEW as of recent, and that's Mark Briscoe. He's been really catching on with the crowd, just that organic kind of charisma and a lot of stuff in terms with him. Wanted to kind of get your perspective, and did you foresee Briscoe kind of getting to this level, and do you see him potentially being a world champion at some point in AEW?
Well, that's a great question. Mark Briscoe has been a world champion in Ring of Honor, and he's just somebody that, and I completely agree with what you're saying, by the way, he's somebody that has a great connection with the fans. I think he's had a great connection for his entire career with the fans everywhere he's wrestled, and he's really been a great wrestler for us. Whether it's as a single star in AEW, as part of the conglomeration, every time Mark Briscoe goes to the ring, wherever we are around the world, the fans connect with Mark Briscoe. He's a great person in and out of the ring, and I absolutely believe Mark Briscoe is capable of being a champion in any company, in any division. We saw that Jay and Mark Briscoe are quite possibly the greatest tag team of all time. It's emotional anytime we come around Dallas, because this is where my time working with them, and for a lot of us around AEW and the ROH that I have owned and operated now for the past few years, that's where we started working with the Briscoes, and that's also the last place we saw and worked with Jay Briscoe.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
And I'll explain. Garland, Texas, the Curtis Colwell Center, where we've got AEW television this week. Of course, Dynamite on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, and then Collision this week will be on Thursday because we've got the big all-in pay-per-view Saturday afternoon in Arlington. And Curtis Colwell Center, that's the first place I ever met the Briscoes and first place I ever worked with Mark or Jay Briscoe. And what a way to connect with two guys that you'd seen on TV that you really respected, but that you didn't get to know personally or work with personally until then and there. And what a trilogy, FTR versus Mark and Jay Briscoe. And it started there in Garland, Texas with the first FTR versus Briscoe's match. So anytime I go into the Curtis Colwell Center, the first thing I think of is the Briscoes. And then later this week we'll be in Arlington, and it'll be in a much bigger venue now at Globe Life Field this Saturday afternoon. But another Saturday afternoon, it was also on a Saturday afternoon in late 2022, where we had Final Battle at UT Arlington, just minutes away from Globe Life Field. And that was the last time I was ever blessed to work with both Briscoe brothers, with Mark and Jay. And they had the culmination of the trilogy was also here around the Dallas Metroplex. It was actually in Arlington, and that was the dog collar match, which was also on a Saturday afternoon. And then after the show, a bunch of people got together, and that was the last time I ever saw Jay Briscoe was that day. And he was a great, great person in AEW, and he was a great person in ROH, but they didn't get to be a part of the show on AEW. We had them backstage. I wanted them to be involved with us. We never got to have the Briscoes on TV in AEW, even though they were around basically a part of the family of our crew. And I am the biggest fan of the tag team, the Briscoes, and Mark Briscoe has, as a singles wrestler, just been absolutely fantastic these past few years for us. And the sky's the limit for him. You know, when he says reach for the sky, that's because the sky's the limit for both the Briscoes. And, I think, Mark has broken out and connected with the crowd as a single star.
And I wouldn't expect anything different from him. He's a great, great wrestler. The fans love him very much. And anytime we're around the Dallas Metroplex, and particularly going to Curtis Colwell Center this week and then to Arlington, that'll always make me think of both Briscoe brothers. And in this case, I know Jay's always with us and watching what AEW is doing, what ROH is doing, and especially what Mark Briscoe is doing. And there are a lot of people that look to Mark Briscoe as a force of positivity and as a leader and a role model. And I think Mark Briscoe is one of the real leaders in the AEW locker room. And we're very fortunate to have Mark Briscoe with us in AEW. He was a great world champion in ROH as a tag team champion, and also more recently as the world champion. And I think he'd be a great champion, any title he held in any company. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Tony. Jim Varsalone with the Miami Herald is up next, followed by Rick Uccino with the takedown on SI. Jim?
I'm curious, Tony, about other projects, other ventures by your talent, and hopefully getting more eyes on the product. MJF is in Happy Gilmore 2, and I'm just curious your thoughts of when talent can do things like that and how maybe it can be promoted, or just to try to create more interest when things like that happen and maybe get more eyes on the product.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, it's a great point, and we're very excited about MJF having this part in Happy Gilmore 2. It's a huge, huge movie project, and I'm very, 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 very proud anytime any of the AEW wrestlers book something like so significant and so major, and especially this is one of the most mainstream significant achievements any of the AEW wrestlers has had in our 6 years, and it should be celebrated. So we're really excited MJF's gotten this huge movie role, and whether MJF is a nice guy in or out of the ring, beside the point, he's a great, great wrestler. He's been in AEW since day one. I think he's one of the most talented professional wrestlers on the planet, and as somebody that has wrestled in AEW since the very beginning of the company, having him out there and booking huge movie roles and being involved in these huge productions, and now being a part of something as big as Happy Gilmore 2, that's massive, and it's great for Max, and it's, I believe, great for AEW and the fans, and it really signifies that everybody was right to put their belief in MJF, not necessarily as a human being or a nice guy, but as a talent. And it is great for MJF, and I think it's also great for AEW to see one of our homegrown top stars in a really significant movie role. And it's a great thing for Max, and everybody here is really, really proud of him. That being said, I know there's a lot of people in the world that don't like MJF, but he is a great example of somebody who works really hard and cares about wrestling and has the mindset that they're going to work to reach the top. And you have to give MJF credit, has reached the top of the pro wrestling profession as one of the biggest stars, as somebody that's held multiple top championships, including the AEW International Championship and the AEW World Championship, and somebody that's wrestled all over the world, that's become one of the most hated villains, one of the top rudos in Mexico now, and somebody that has traveled the world not only as a pro wrestler now, but also as an entertainer, and has built that reputation in AEW and wrestling, and is now building a reputation in Hollywood while still working really hard on wrestling and keeping the focus on wrestling first and foremost. And I really respect that. And I think absolutely we have to give MJF a lot of credit for that. And it's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up, Jim. I think going into AEW All In this month in July. It's also important to remember that the wrestlers have a lot of great projects coming up outside of wrestling, and certainly Happy Gilmore too is a great example of that and a great project. And we're all very excited about MJF being a part of Happy Gilmore too. Thanks for asking about that.
Thank you, Jim, and thanks, Tony. Rick Uccino with the takedown on SI is up next, followed by Joey Hayden with the Dallas Morning News. Rick?
Talk to you as always. Looking forward to the show this weekend, particularly the Women's Casino Gauntlet. I was there for the first one in Cincinnati earlier this year. Excited for the sequel. I know Ella already asked about some surprises. Perhaps Dr. Britt Baker could be one of them. Not asking you to spoil anything, obviously, but I was hoping you'd be able to clear some things up in regards to her. There have been some conflicting reports about her over the past week. Some say she's actively seeking her release from the company. Others vehemently denying that that is the case. Have there ever been any conversations about Britt wanting to depart AEW, and do you expect to have her back on television in the future?
I've never had a conversation about Britt departing AEW. I like Britt a lot. And, I think one thing we've done really well with AEW is, build a tight focused show around a really strong roster, and it's been very consistent. And I think we've really had a very, very good year of pay-per-view and TV. And absolutely, there are some people that have not been featured, that we have a great group of wrestlers that have not necessarily been on the show a lot, or even in some cases 2025, that are very talented, and we would like to work back in when the opportunity presents itself. On a baseball team, you use 9 players at a time. In the NFL, you can put 11 in at a time and rotate across the snaps, but you're on each play, you're only using 11 players. NBA or college basketball, it's 5-on-5. Pro wrestling, it's unique because you can use a different number of people, but there's still only so many slots you can fit into a show. And I think we've done a great job using a lot of the roster this year. We haven't used everybody. And there are some really talented people on our bench that we can call in that could be a great part of the show. And I absolutely think that applies to a number of women and men that are not necessarily being featured right now, but we could bring in that would be a great focus on the show as those spots open up and the timing is right to integrate different people into the show, just like you make substitutions in a sports team. But I think one thing we've done very well this year is not try to force everybody on the show every week. And, I think what we have had is really well-paced, excellent wrestling television shows week in, week out with a really focused crew. So I do really want to continue that. But I think Britt's a great example of somebody that's very, very talented and we could utilize in AEW in the right situation at the right time. And just like in pro sports, when you have some really talented people that aren't necessarily starting every game at that point, doesn't mean they won't be starting in the future. If that makes sense, I think it makes sense for me to look at the AEW roster like a sports team and trying to manage the minutes, but also the rotation. And we've done a really good job with the people we're focusing on right now, but that doesn't mean we can't focus on other people or rotate different people in into the show going forward. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony, and thanks, Rick. Joey Hayden with the Dallas Morning News is up next, followed by Amy Nemedy with WrestleJoy. Joey? Joey, go ahead.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Great. Sticking to the women's division, Athena will be defending her Ring of Honor Women's Championship at Supercard of Honor. And every time you guys come through town, whether it's Final Battle or Death Before Dishonor, she always gets one of those main event spots. But given that this weekend was All In and you have 20,000 seats to fill at Globe Life Field, was there ever a thought to possibly putting that historic title reign on the pedestal of that show in her hometown against Thunder Rosa?
Well, Athena and Thunder Rosa, I expect both of them will be involved in both events. I think it's great to have the Ring of Honor champion defending the world title on a major Ring of Honor event. But in the cases of both the Ring of Honor World Championship matches, I think they're both great matches. I have a lot of respect for all four wrestlers in both the world title matches. In the case of Athena versus challenger Thunder Rosa, the Fallen Goddess Athena has been the world champion for years of Ring of Honor and won the championship in Arlington and has defended it around Dallas and all over the world. And now for the champion Athena to come back here and be defending against somebody that she just competed against in Global Wars Mexico in a tag team fight and has been part of this brewing rivalry between Thunder Rosa and Athena on ROH TV. It's spilled over into AEW TV in recent weeks as well. And I expect to see them both featured on both shows, of course, in this key world championship match at Supercard of Honor, Athena versus Thunder Rosa for the ROH World Championship at Supercard of Honor, and also to have both of them involved in the Casino Gauntlet match, potentially if their numbers are called at AEW All In. We saw both of them competing on Dynamite for the number one spot last week in the Casino Gauntlet match. And going forward, I think there's a great opportunity now for both of them potentially in the Casino Gauntlet match if their number gets called. I would love to see both of them on AEW All In, and I would expect there's a good chance to see both Thunder Rosa and Athena twice this weekend as they'll be wrestling for the world title at ROH Supercard. And they will also be wrestling, of course, potentially if their numbers get called, in the Casino Gauntlet match at AEW All In. So I think it's a great way to have a world championship match and for the Ring of Honor pay-per-view to feature the champion of Ring of Honor, which, you know, to your question, I think it makes a lot of sense for the champion to be defending the title on the ROH pay-per-view, but also we want to have the best wrestlers in the world competing on AEW All In. And certainly Athena and Thunder Rosa are two of the top stars, and I would expect to see them both at All In as well. If their numbers get called, there's a good chance you'd see both of them in the Gauntlet match, which, again, they were both competing for the number one spot in that Gauntlet match. Chris Statlander secured that number one spot. There's going to be a great four-way match tomorrow on Wednesday Night Dynamite for the number two spot in the Gauntlet. So we know who's going to be number one. We have an idea who the four women competing for the number two spot are. But then if the match continues past number one versus number two, I think Athena and Thunder Rosa both do have a great chance to compete on this pay-per-view on AEW All In, as well as being in a key position about ROH Supercard of Honor. I would like to address Supercard. I have a couple notes on that, Danny. I cover at the end of the media call.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Tony. Up next, we have Amy Nemedy with WrestleJoy, followed by Mike Johnson with PW Insider. Amy, go ahead.
Hi, Tony. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hey, Amy.
Hi. So you've talked a lot about AEW having its biggest year with great storytelling, a lot of tight focus. And part of that ties into what I want to ask you about, which is Hangman Page and Jon Moxley in part of the triple main event for All In. Now, Hangman and Mox's rivalry have been incredibly physical and emotionally complex. They've been circling around each other from the very beginning, as far back as 2019, in tags, singles matches, and even death matches, Texas death matches. We've seen both of these men carry AEW in different ways over the years as champions and in their characters. Can you talk about the stakes of this match for both the championship and the spirit of AEW, and what made right now the perfect time for them to make their last stand at All In Texas?
Well, I'm so excited about all of those matches, all three of those great main event matches. And in particular, with Jon Moxley and Hangman Page, you have two wrestlers that have been a part of AEW since the very first show we've ever done. Two wrestlers that have been a focus of the promotion from the very first episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Two wrestlers that have had wars with each other and with most of the top stars in the company. And two people that are largely responsible for the success of AEW from the very beginning and throughout the company's ascension over the years are Hangman Page and Jon Moxley. And they've both held the world championship, and they've held championships in AEW and the world championship, but both of them are also a big part of what got us to this point. And I think Jon Moxley and Hangman Page in a Texas death match embodies a kind of match that you'd want as a top main event match at AEW All In, to have two of your top stars in a rivalry that has been building and building going back many years. And in this case, with Jon Moxley having taken a very dark turn in the second half of 2024, Hangman Page himself has been down a very dark road. And it is something that I'm really looking forward to watching, and something I'm really looking forward to everybody seeing this Saturday. Mox versus Hangman. They've both been great champions for us. They've both been faces of AEW, and I think that our fans really want to see this match one-on-one, Mox versus Hangman. So much of AEW's history is tied to both men, and I am really, really looking forward to this match. I think they've both been great champions for us, and either one would be a great champion coming out of this pay-per-view. And I really believe it's just going to be an absolutely fantastic match, Mox versus Hangman, this Saturday at AEW All In Texas in the Texas Death Match. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony. Next up, we have Mike Johnson with PW Insider, followed by Sulian Khan with SlamWrestling.net. Mike, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I beat the audio into submission. I'm proud to say that. Let's talk. I want to talk to you a little bit about the live gate for the show at in Arlington. You had told TMZ you expected it to be over a $3 million gate. Have we hit that mark yet? And where do you think at this point in time it's going to finally land? And what do you think you can do to kind of push people at the last second to come out in the Dallas Arlington market so you can hopefully get over the $3 million mark?
Well, it's close to $3 million gate now, which is amazing. It's by far the biggest AEW gate we've ever had in North America, and it is continuing to grow. I don't want to put a cap on it because I think we're going to have a great walk-up, and it's going to continue. So I want everyone to know there's still great seats available, and we're selling very well. This event is already a complete success. It's the most tickets we've ever sold in North America. And we're really proud of the show, and the excitement around AEW All In is really high, and it's going to be a great, great week of events. I think that it could continue. It's going to be a new record for us wherever it settles out, but I'm very confident it's going to go over 3 million. It's just approaching that now. It's well over $2.5 million gate, approaching $3 million gate, and continuing to grow. We're really proud of that, and it's history being made for us. It's also something very significant that it's the most fans we've ever had in North America at any show. So it's going to be a very successful event in many ways for us, but I also think it's just going to be a great show, be a lot of fun to watch. There's a lot of rivalries that have been building, and they're rivalries between great, great wrestlers that should really culminate in awesome matches this Saturday afternoon at AEW All in Texas. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think that the success of the show is a certainty now in terms of the business. We have to go out there and put on a great event, but all the pieces are in place to go out and have a great event. And the sales, I think we could have a great walk-up week and blow away the numbers we have right now. So who knows, but I definitely am very confident it's going to end up over 3 million. It's getting close to that now, and it's a great success story for AEW. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony. Sulian Khan with SlamWrestling.net is up next, followed by Bill Pritchard with WrestleZone.
Tony, thanks for taking the time out.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you specifically about the tag match between the Jacksons and Ospreay and Swerve Strickland. What have you seen from Swerve Strickland in the past year or so that he's shown a lot of confidence? He's brought a lot of, for lack of a better word, aura whenever he shows up in the ring. How would you describe his resurgence or emergence in the last little while? Thank you.
Well, that's great. So, sorry, could to the end of your question, it cut out for me for a second. Can you please ask that one more time?
Yeah, just to sum up, sorry. The last like year or so for Swerve Strickland, if you could just sum up how you've seen him grow as a wrestler, both inside and outside the ring.
Great. Well, I'm very excited for that match. I think that's going to be something incredible to have the Young Bucks, one of the greatest tag teams in the world, versus two of the greatest individual wrestlers in the world, Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay. I have a very high opinion of all four of the men individually. The Young Bucks, I've certainly had disagreements with them on TV in the past, but I have to say that I have a ton of respect for Matt and Nick Jackson as wrestlers and as people, and I think they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time, and they've been involved in some of the greatest matches ever in AEW, and I have very high expectations for this match, Swerve Strickland to Will Ospreay versus the Young Bucks. I think that it's been great having the Young Bucks back on AEW TV since AEW Dynasty, but you have to look at the way they returned to AEW, costing Swerve Strickland the world championship and the kind of things they've done since they've been back. And with Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay, I think the two of them, if they work together as individuals, if they can form a great team, they can have a great, great match with the Young Bucks, who are one of the greatest teams in the world. And when you look at the athletes in this match, the potential is there, I think, for this to be one of the best matches of the night, or even maybe one of the best matches of the year. But certainly all the talent is there, and all the pieces are there to have something really special with this match. I have a really high opinion of everybody in the match, and I'm glad you asked about Swerve Strickland. He's somebody that has been with AEW for several years and has continued getting better and better. He's a great, great wrestler. He's done fantastic work representing the company out in major media, whether it's at major events, sporting events, throwing out a first pitch, at a NASCAR event, representing the company at a movie premiere or a major licensing event. Swerve Strickland's a great franchise player, somebody that is a really key wrestler in AEW. And I'm very, very glad to have Swerve in such a prominent position here, teaming with another one of the top stars in AEW, the Aerial Assassin Will Ospreay, in a very high stakes tag team match versus one of the greatest tag teams of all time, the Young Bucks. On paper, this sounds like it's going to be an absolutely fantastic match. And what's really fun is wrestling matches are not on paper. They're in real life. And this is going to be, I think, a really high speed, hard hitting, awesome, high flying pro wrestling match. And very excited about Swerve and Will Ospreay versus the Young Bucks this Saturday afternoon. Thanks for asking.
Thank you,
Danny.
Tony.
Before I take the next, thank you, Danny. Before I take the next question, I would like to address something with Supercard of Honor, and then we can jump back in and take one last question if it's okay, if everybody has a minute. But due to some injuries that we've had in AEW and ROH, I've had to make some changes to some of my plans around multiple matches, in particular in the women's division. And there are some matches that I would like to have announced, and there's a bit of a domino effect in these things. We had a couple injuries in AEW that changed the flow of things. Just to be transparent, with Jamie Hayter being out longer than I would like in AEW, I made some call-ups and changed the roles of some people. One example of somebody who's been really prominent in AEW, and this is why it's great having ROH as a complementary promotion that is a standalone company that can have great events of their own, but also work with AEW and develop potentially some young wrestlers for AEW and also feature great veteran stars and allow young wrestlers to work with each other or to take on great veterans and get that great experience. Somebody that's come in and done a great job on AEW TV in recent weeks is Queen Aminata. And Queen Aminata has also been involved at times in ROH. Queen Aminata has been very prominently involved in the AEW television lately and is doing a great job. And whether it's ROH or AEW, I think she's somebody, a great example of a hardworking person that's done very well and has taken advantage of opportunities that I think would have presented themselves, but maybe not ever. I think she's gotten even more opportunities as a result of an injury. Now, that's one example of an injury in AEW that is to a really prominent top star. And when you're missing a prominent top star for several weeks, like we've been missing Jamie Hayter for several weeks, then you're going to move other people into those positions and people are going to get called up and there's going to be reorganization. I had been hoping to start the ROH Women's Pure Tournament a bit sooner, had some injuries, and now have had another injury that changes the structure and the scheduling for some of the big matches in the ROH women's division. And that is with the ROH Women's World TV title. With the ROH Women's World Television Champion, Red Velvet, she's doing a fantastic job. I really like Red Velvet a lot, and I think she's having a great 2025. A lot of her best work has been international stuff. International competition with CMLL and representing ROH as the world TV champion in CMLL in great matches, including on the Global Wars special, which I thought was one of the best episodes of ROH TV we've had. And I think one of the best episodes of TV ROH has ever done. And it featured incredible matches. You had the world champion Bandido defending the title against Mascara Dorada. Of course, now Bandido will be defending the title at Supercard versus Takeshita. We saw a preview of the Women's World Championship match with Athena and Thunder Rosa lined up on opposite sides. And we also had the Women's World TV champion, Red Velvet, involved in that match. Now, Red Velvet is injured and was injured that week in Mexico and has not competed since. There are a number of women that have been clamoring for spots in the ROH Women's Pure Championship match, but also would want to be in line for the following. And first things first, so I would like to address this with the injuries to Red Velvet. It's something that I think she's going to be able to work through, but she's not going to be able to defend, due to injury, the Women's Championship at Supercard of Honor. So I will address that situation with an interim World TV title, and we'll be at a later date resolving that. But because Red Velvet is not able to compete, I will be having a ROH Women's World TV title interim champion crowned at Supercard of Honor. And that situation then caused some delays getting the Pure title tournament started, because frankly, a lot of the same people fighting for the position of the interim TV champion would also be in line for the Pure championship tournament. So I am looking forward to Supercard, but I would be remiss if I didn't say that I would love to have a defense of the TV title on the show, but I'm also not going to put the champion in that position. I think Red Velvet will be back in a matter of weeks, maybe a few months tops. So that's why I think crowning an interim champion makes a lot of sense. And hopefully that situation would be resolved by Death Before Dishonor. Thanks for giving me a chance to address that, Danny. I just didn't know if the next question would flow into that, but I did want to talk about it on the media call going into Supercard. You know, as that's why we haven't announced a TV title match for the women's division yet, or the Pure women's championship matches, because frankly, I think it's going to be some of the same women competing for those same spots. Thanks, Danny.
No, of course. Thank you very much, Tony. Do you have time for one more question before we wrap? I know we've gone over your allotted hour.
Yes, I do. I have as much time as we need. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, then we're going to wrap up with Bill Pritchard from WrestleZone.com. So, Bill, the floor is yours.
How are you?
Hey.
Hey, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, Bill.
Hey. So I actually do have a Ring of Honor related question. So I think it worked out. So Supercard of Honor has been advertised for a few different places, and I know there was a report that you were looking at a venue in Las Vegas before it was moved to Atlantic City, and then that was moved to this weekend. I just wanted to see if you could talk about why the venue changed so much, and if this is going to be part of like All In Weekend as a annual tradition, or if you have thought about the plans for where Supercard's going to fit into the schedule moving forward.
Well, thanks for asking. I think we only made one scheduling change, and I thought it was a positive change. You know, there was the only time we had talked about any other, it was on the East Coast. And we're still going to have a great ROH pay-per-view on the East Coast. Where did you hear the lot? I've never heard that about Las Vegas. That's not true, but I've also never heard it before seeing that report. Bill, if I may, where's that from?
So it was never reported that it was happening in Las Vegas. It was just that there was a discussion.
There was no discussion of that.
Okay.
That's not true. So there was one venue change, but it was really to give everybody the best possible show. Mm-hmm. And there was a plan to do a show in the Northeast, and we're still doing Death Before Dishonor in the Northeast. But also here, it was a great opportunity to have Supercard of Honor back in the venue where I did my first Supercard of Honor and my first ROH pay-per-view 3 years ago. And to have Supercard tied with All In Weekend and have access to great talent and have so many great AEW and pro wrestling fans in the market and in the city, that it would give Supercard and Death Before Dishonor a great chance if we get, basically what we did is moved Supercard from the Northeast to Dallas, but also move Death Before Dishonor back to the Northeast to Philadelphia, which is just minutes away from the original site we had. So there was just one trade, basically, of markets between shows. So that's really all it was. And Danny, I could take one more for All In if there is anybody still out there. And that's a good question, Bill. But I'd never heard that about Vegas. It was really a direct one-to-one flip, moving that show that was originally going to be around Atlantic City. And we had a great collision event in Atlantic City still. And then we're going to come back and have a lot of great events around Philadelphia. And the idea was anybody that would have been going to that show around Atlantic City, we would still want those great fans to come around Philadelphia, but also that it would give us the ability to bring Supercard to Arlington and back to Esports Stadium, where we had a great pay-per-view last year, where we've had some really great events, and where we're going to have a big weekend this weekend.
Thanks, Tony. We'll wrap up with Bill Bodkin from the Pop Break. Bill? Bill, go ahead.
All right. Tony, just want to ask you about Hangman Adam Page. I know that was asked a little bit about the Moxley Hangman Page match, but I've noticed, as someone who's watched AEW since the BTE New Year's Eve reveal, when AEW, when things are going great, it feels like the crowd and Hangman are like in lockstep. And recently we've seen on Dynamite just how apoplectic the crowd is when Hangman comes out and he talks. In your own words, Hangman's been a day one guy. What is it about Hangman that has made him this main character in AEW? And it's almost like when Hangman is on, everything's going on the rise with Hangman, so is AEW and so is the fans. Like, what is it about this guy, in your opinion, in your mind, that makes him so special?
Well, I think everybody identified Hangman as a future star. And it's like in sports, when the fans and Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay and all the NFL executives see a top player going into the draft, everybody recognizes that talent. And it can take years for somebody to realize their full potential. But I feel like we've all watched Hangman Page grow from being that number one draft pick and mature and develop into being the main event pro wrestler that you want that number one draft pick to be. When we started AEW, nobody said he was the finished product. He was clearly a wrestler on the rise. He was a very promising young talent, and he's a man in his prime right now. And that's an exciting thing to see in any sport, and in pro wrestling, where the fans have such an emotional connection with the athletes, where the wrestlers are first and foremost, and we all work together. We all support each other. It's really exciting as a wrestling fan to see somebody that you believed in and somebody that you could even see the company believed in really reach that potential. And that's what's happening with Hangman Page these past few years. You're seeing somebody go from being that number one draft pick to being a ready top star in their prime. And what's exciting now is he's just starting his prime. He's entering his prime, and that's really, really cool. And we've watched him get better and better and tougher and stronger and meaner. And then we've watched him reconnect with the fans and understand the difference between right and wrong. And we've seen him get pushed to the limit. We've seen him tested mentally, physically, over and over again, and he keeps coming back. And I think we all know there's a good man in there, and that's a big part of why people connect with him and care about him and are gravitated towards the Hangman. And there are many other reasons too. I mean, I think we could write a long dissertation on it, but I do think whenever a top star develops in front of the fans' eyes, and especially when it's somebody that everybody, the company and the other wrestlers and the fans, have all identified and said that this is going to be a top star for the company, when it really works out, it's a great, great thing, and it's a lot of fun for everyone involved. And I think that's why the journey of Hangman has been so fun to watch over the years, and I think that's why AEW is always a better company when Hangman is thriving. Thank you for asking that. And Danny, I don't know if we have any more. I have time to do more, but I really like answering everyone's questions. But this has just been fantastic, and thanks for being such a great moderator today.
Well, thanks, Tony. No, that comes to the end of our questions. Know that you've given a lot of thoughts today, so I don't know if you have any closing thoughts before we wrap up here.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. This is a great, great, great time for AEW, and a lot of that is due to the people on this call. And I know I always thank the fans, and with good reason, because for all of us, whether we're working for a wrestling company or working in wrestling media, all of us really, we need the fans. And I think hopefully all of us are fans. I know I am. And I think pretty much everybody I've talked to on this call loves wrestling, and that's why we all do this. And it's a really exciting time for AEW. And I think it's a great time for pro wrestling. It's going to be an awesome weekend, but I'm very grateful to you all coming and dialing in and calling into this. I have tried to answer as many questions as possible today. If I didn't get to your question today, or if you have more questions beyond what you asked today, either way, hopefully I'll get a chance to talk to you Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening by the time it's done. And hopefully I'll see you all at AEW All In, or talk to you on a future media call or at a scrum. But I really appreciate you all doing this and giving AEW a chance. A lot of you have been covering the company since day one for over 6 years now, and I'm very grateful for that. And thanks for your great questions today, and Danny, thanks for being a great moderator. And hopefully we'll see you all this Saturday afternoon at All In, and before that, tomorrow night, we're gonna have a great go home Wednesday night Dynamite. It should be a great event ahead of a great pay-per-view this weekend. Don't forget, Collision is on Thursday this week. And we'll do our best to remind you of that tomorrow on Dynamite. But thanks again for doing this, and hopefully see a lot of you Saturday at the Scrum. Thanks, Danny.
Thank you, Tony, and thanks, everybody. We're now at the end of our time. We'll be distributing an audio recording of this call to all attendees shortly, but we thank you again for being a part of today's call. Looking forward to you joining us for AEW All In Texas in Arlington this Sunday, or Saturday, excuse me. Have a great day.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences, and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity, and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently, too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.